Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Du hører nå på podcasten Forhandlinger på liv og død. Jeg heter Alexander Nordahl og jobber i Dagens Næringsliv.
Is everything okay with Michael?
Yes, he's okay.
Is it possible for me to speak with him? Do you know that he's okay?
Just a minute, but just in English, okay?
Yeah.
Just tell him your name. You're okay.
Hello.
Hello, is it Michael?
Yes.
Yes. This is Ola from the police.
Denne episoden handler om Michael, som ble tatt som gissel på Hotel Royal Christiania i Oslo en desemberdag i 2014. Hvis du ikke har hørt forrige episode, som handler om selve gisselsituasjonen, og hvordan krise- og gisselforhandlerne i politiet jobbet med å få Michael fri, foreslår jeg at du hører den først. Når gisselsituasjoner omtales i media, får vi sjeldent høre noe om hvordan gisslet har det. Hvordan er det at noen tar deg til fange, truer med å drepe deg, og du ikke aner at når eller om du kommer til å bli sluppet fri? For å finne ut hvordan det kan være, skal du få møte Michael, gisslet på rom 476.
Alexander?
Yes, Michael.
Yeah, we can. Snakker du norsk? Snakker du engelsk? Snakker du begge deler?
Han ble holdt fanget av den ungarske gisseltageren du hørte i forrige episode. Mens krise- og gisselforhandleren Ola snakket med gisseltageren i flere timer, satt Michael på gulvet og trodde han skulle dø. Michael fra Ghana, som ligger vest i Afrika. I 2014 bodde han på Ås, mens han tok en master i internasjonale relasjoner ved Norges miljø- og biovitenskapelige universitet.
At the time I was a student and I was taking my master at NMBU, Norwegian University of Life Sciences. So it's a master in international relations.
Og Michael har eksamen dagen etter. Men så ringer de fra Hotel Royal Christiania, der Michael jobber som renholder. Sjefen spør om han kan ta en ekstra vakt.
I was actually not on schedule to work. I was also working at the hotel as a vicar. So it's more or less like when they need you, they just call you. So when I got the call, I was like, oh, but I have an exam tomorrow. Anyway, I think I've read enough for the exam, so I don't think this should be a worry for me. So
Michael har dårlig tid. Toget fra Ås til Oslo går bare en gang i timen. Han rekker ikke spise frokost. Han bare hiver på seg klærne, kommer seg ut døra og løper hele veien til togstasjonen.
When I got to the train station, luckily at the moment I got there, I saw the train was also coming down to the station, so I managed to get a train and got to work.
Han leser til eksamen mens han sitter på toget på vei til Oslo.
Avstigning venstre side.
Michael fremme og går ut av Oslo sentralbanestasjon. På andre siden av gaten, litt til høyre, ser han hotellet han jobber på, Royal Christiania. To dager tidligere stod gisseltageren med togstasjonen i ryggen og så mot det samme hotellet. Han bestemte seg der og da for at han skulle gjennomføre kidnappingen på akkurat det stedet. Mens Michael småløper over veien og inn på hotellet, venter gisseltageren oppe på rom 476 med teip, tau, elektrosjokkvåpen og en stor kniv. Men det er noe Michael har glemt. Noe han gjør hver dag.
I'm a Christian, so I usually pray in the morning before I do whatever. So, but that day, I didn't pray when I was running to the train station. So I remember when I got to the garderobe and after everything, and I said, oh, I didn't pray today. I just put my head on the locker that belongs to me, and then I just said just a short prayer. I just put my head there and I said, oh, thank you, God, for today. I pray that you help me, protect me, and be with me. Amen. And that was all. And then after that, I just went out because I was late, actually.
Michael leder hodet mot garderobeskapet sitt og ber en kort bønn.
And also, because I had an exam the next day, I wanted to be as fast as possible so that when I finish my duty for the day, I can tell them and then leave to go and continue preparing for the exams the next day. So, but unfortunately, it became the longest day of my life.
Michael går for å finne listen over hvilke rom han skal rengjøre. Så tar han med seg trallen sin opp i fjerde etasje.
I remember I cleaned one room, second room, and the man's room was third or fourth, something like that.
Michael går bort til døren med romnummer 476 og banker på for å finne ut om rommet tomt. Det det ikke. På listen hans står det at noen bor der. Og derfor skal Michael bare vaske badet, ta med skittne håndklær, re opp sengen og tømme søpla.
So when I knock and I knew that there could be somebody there because on the list it wasn't a vacant room. So when I knock and he came out, I saw and I said, I think I will come back later. Normally when there is somebody there, the person has to hang a paper at the back or at the door just to tell you that maybe he's busy or he doesn't want the room to be clean again.
Men på denne døren henger det et skilt der det står at gjesten ønsker å få rommet rengjort.
I was about leaving and then he said, no, I'm even going out. And then I just went to the room to clean.
Det er fortsatt en vanlig dag på jobb for Michael. Han dytter trallen sin inn på rommet og begynner å vaske.
I went to clean the bathroom and he had gone out actually. He went out first while I was cleaning and then he came.
Ungareren reiser seg, går bort til døren og låser den. Så roper han på Michael.
First, he ordered me to move from the bathroom. And then he had put a chair on the corner. And then he had the knife and the electric shocker. So he told me to sit and I sat. He's tall and huge, you know. So, and there was a bed also on one side and then the small corner there. So it was like I had no space to jump out or pass anywhere. So he had this Rambo kind of knife and then the electric shocker. So there was a point where he pulled out, he said, you see this? And then he pressed the electric shocker. And then it was like, krr, krr. And at that point in time, I became like dumb. And then he told me, you know what? If you obey, follow the instructions, then nothing bad will happen to you. I'm not going to hurt you. But if you disobey, then you have yourself to blame.
Gisseltageren beordrer Michael til å sette seg på en stol i hjørnet og viser frem elektrosjokkvåpenet og den store kniven.
In my mind, I was so confused. When you are in that situation, if you don't calm down, you are likely either to lose your life or the person will lose his life. There are two things involved. Either you will die or the person will die. But I look at my chances of survival because I knew that he's taller and bigger than myself. And so I didn't want to engage him in that. He told me that if I cooperate with him, then he wouldn't do anything. But if I don't cooperate, then he can hurt me. He tied my hands, tied my feet, and then put a sellotape on my mouth, and then put me on the ground by the bed. Sometimes he would drag me from one side to the other side. I was confused. I was so confused of what was happening. I thought I would die. I wanted to put my thoughts together because I was confused as to what to do. So the only thing I could do was to calm down so that my mind could work. And then I just sat down and I was calm, listening to him.
Etter en liten stund ringer gisseltageren resepsjonen og ber om å få sendt opp en ansatt.
I think he called the reception or something like that and gave them a letter. And then But the person who came for the letter didn't see me, and I couldn't do anything because my mouth was sealed.
På arket står det. Dette Peter på rom 476. Jeg har et gissel på rommet mitt. Det en bombe et sted i Oslo, og jeg har utløseren. Hvis noen prøver å komme inn på rommet, vil jeg drepe gisselet og utløse bomben. Ring politiet. Jeg vil snakke med en forhandler via en tolk, som snakker ungarsk. Vær rolig og rask. Når resepsjonen får lappen, ringer de politiet.
Nobeluken altså i gang. I ettermiddag ankom indiske Kailash Satyarthi, mens pakistanske Malala...
There was also a program going on TV. So sometimes, when he wants to understand, then he will remove the edition and ask me what is happening. Where is this place? I think there was Nobel Peace on that day, so... And he told me that he had a bomb also, hidden somewhere in Oslo, but I don't know where exactly where that bomb was.
Michael vet altså at han tatt som gissel av en person som villig til å skade ham med kniv eller elektrosjokkvåpen, og at gisseltageren sier han har plassert ut en bombe i Oslo. Og nå sitter Michael der og hører på at mannen forhandler med politiet.
Sometimes I feel I'm going to die. But sometimes I feel I'm not going to die because sometimes he behaves normal, very calm with you. And then sometimes he appears very angry, like he's angry or something like that. So it was very difficult to read his mood. He appears calm sometimes asking me, are you hungry? Do you need something to drink? And then sometimes he appears moody and not talking to you and was sometimes engaging with the police. That got him angry. And when he's also talking with the police, I also become a bit worried because I don't know how the response is going to be because the only way he could react negatively to the police is me. If whatever he does to me will mean to perhaps punish the police for not giving in to whatever he was looking for. So sometimes I feel maybe I will die, maybe I will die. Oh, maybe I will not die, maybe I will not die. Those were the things that were going on in my mind.
Etter hvert spør gisseltageren Michael om han vil ha sjokolade eller appelsinjus. Han svarer nei. Han redd for at gisseltageren skal forgifte ham.
And sometimes he'll ask me if I want to drink something, and I said no. Because all I was thinking about was... getting out. And another fear was also about the police coming in by force. Because I've seen it in the news where the police sometimes had to use force. And when they had to use force, of course, if they have guns, it was in my mind that what if the police also come by force and start shooting? I could also die from the police gunshot. So those were not just only the man, but I was also thinking of the police rescue.
Michael er redd for å bli skutt av politiet om de skulle storme rommet for å løse gisselsituasjonen. Men når det skjer en kidnapping, er det først og fremst gisslet politiet bryr seg om. Dette er Monica. Hun har lang erfaring med gisselforhandlinger etter mange år i KGF.
I de situasjonene, når det er gisselsituasjon, eller en frihetsberøvelse, kidnapping, kall det hva man vil, så er det jo det, er det, jo det livet vi jobber for å redde. Så det er det som er hele, det er det som er største fokuset vårt. Det er å redde livet og hjelpe de som er blitt tatt mot sin vilje. Det er det som er drivkraften og alt vi egentlig tenker på. Og så er det selvfølgelig at man ønsker at færrest mulig liv skal gå tapt. Man ønsker jo heller ikke at livet til gisseltageren, at den personen skal dø. Men det blir, det er litt underordnet det, altså. Eller klart underordnet i forhold til å redde livet til de som er tatt mot sin vilje.
And I'm happy that the Norwegian police did well and were able to calm situation to rescue me, because it was also a worry to me that maybe the police will use force, jump in and then start shooting and I would die. But the man, initially I didn't even know where he was coming from. I thought he's maybe a terrorist. I thought he was a terrorist actually.
Michael har studert internasjonal sikkerhet og lurer nå på om han har havnet midt i en terrorsituasjon. Var dette Michaels skjebne? Var det Guds plan for ham at han skulle dø som gissel?
I pray and trust God. Oh God, please help me out of this situation. Please help me out of this situation. But sometimes I also feel like maybe I'm destined to die this way. So even if you are destined to die this way, then that's the way maybe God is calling you to him. That's another thing that I was also thinking of. But I was praying also sometimes. Sometimes I'll be praying, sometimes I'll be focusing on looking at him and trying to make out what he's... And he'll be sitting by the computer, pressing certain things, going on some website or something, I don't know. But when he's sitting on the computer doing something, I feel like maybe he's communicating with outsiders or something. I don't know.
I all denne usikkerheten ble det viktig for Michael å be og snakke til Gud inni seg. For den eneste han kunne prate med i rommet var mannen som truet med å drepe ham, og det turte han ikke.
Because at that point in time, until I got the opportunity to talk to the police, the only person I could talk to in my heart was God. Because inside there, there was nobody to talk to except this guy who is the one ready to take your life. So I was praying and trusting God that everything will be fine.
Så blir Michael usikker på hva som er virkelighet og hva som ikke er det.
In the room, I remember there was a point I thought it was a dream. I remember that I thought it was a dream. So I closed my eyes so hard and then I opened my eyes so that if it is a dream, I could wake up from the dream. But when I woke up, the man was there. I was still in the room. Like, okay, maybe if it is a dream, let me try close my eyes and open so that if it is a dream, I can get out of this nightmare. And then I closed my eyes, open, boom. And still the man was there. And then I realized, no, it's not a dream. This is a reality, you know.
Og mens Michael lurer på om han drømmer, har det blitt satt i gang et stort apparat av politifolk på utsiden og innsiden av hotellet. Her er Monica fra KGF igjen.
Det er jo oss selvfølgelig, KGF, og så er det beredskapstroppen. Det kan også være bombetjenesten hvis jeg snakker om eksplosiver, og det var det jo den saken der. Det kan være helikoptertjenesten, så er det etterforskere blir aktivert med en gang. Det er etterretning blir jo aktivert for å skaffe mest mulig informasjon om situasjonen og informasjon som kommer fram i situasjonen, da. Så det er et kjempestort apparat som settes i gang når det er sånne situasjoner.
Mens politiet omringer hotellet og rom 476, har gisseltageren bundet Michaels hender og føtter på en måte som gjør det vanskelig å bevege seg. Rommet er så lite at gisseltageren ser alt Michael gjør.
I assume he might have some training on how to tie people or something like that. And the room is not so big. So whatever you do, he will see you. Whatever you try to do, he sees whatever you are trying to do. So sometimes he appears stressed. The police were not giving in to his demands. So sometimes he appears stressed. And then he'll be walking up and down, up and down, up and down, on or in front of the bed, up, down. But he doesn't go out of my sight. They were talking, and trying to negotiate. But I remember he needed 1 million something, whether euros or something. And I remember him saying he also demanded Mercedes with tinted glass.
På utsiden av hotellet sitter Monikas nærmeste kollega Ola I tillegg til to andre forhandlere. Det Ola som prater I telefonen med gisseltageren. Ola avtaler at gisseltageren skal gi telefonen til Michael, så han og Ola kan prate sammen.
Is everything okay with Michael?
Yes, he's okay.
Is it possible for me to speak with him? Do you know that he's okay?
Just a minute, but just in English, okay?
Yeah.
He said to me, you can't speak any language apart from English. Only English. I said, okay, no problem. And then he removed the tape from my mouth.
Yeah. Just tell him your name. You're okay.
Hello.
Hello, is it Michael?
Yes.
Yes. This is Ola from the police.
Okay.
Yeah. We are doing whatever we can now to solve this situation peacefully. So just be calm.
Okay.
And I remember Ola asking me and assuring me that everything will be fine. I shouldn't be stressed. I shouldn't be worried. They are taking steps to make sure that they rescue me. And that was the biggest assurance I got. I mean, it gives me a lot of sense of hope.
Can I have your birth date so we can confirm that it's you?
Sorry.
Okay.
It's okay.
Is it Peter?
Okay.
Peter, yeah. Thank you very much. Can I just get his birth date so I can confirm that it's Michael?
Okay. I'll give it back to him.
Okay, thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
Michaels samtale med Ola ble kort. Men sånn det ikke alltid I gisselsituasjoner der Ola og Monica forhandler.
Veldig ofte så det jo gislene vi snakker med. Gislene jo da ofte instruert av gisseltager. Og det vet vi jo, at de har fått beskjed om hva de skal si, og hva de skal gjøre. Så det som da veldig viktig for vår del da, det jo å lytte til hva som blir sagt, sånn at vi får med oss den informasjonen som det gisle har å si. For det selvfølgelig viktig for det gisle. Og så det å betrygge på hvem vi hva vi gjør, at vi gjør alt vi kan for å få en god løsning på saken og situasjonen. Det å lytte, det å betrygge og det å forklare det som kjempeviktig for oss når vi snakker med gisler. Og også hvis det passer seg, at vi, så det også viktig for oss å formidle at vi at vi også ivaretar familien. At alt står bra til med dem, sett opp mot situasjonen da.
Men Michael har ikke noen familie I Norge. Han alene, og han vet at gisseltageren krever 1 million euro for å slippe ham fri.
When he was demanding 1 million euros, I thought that, well, I mean, why would you think that I'm not a citizen of this country? If I'm a citizen, of course, then the state will spend 1 million euro to rescue the citizen. But I'm not a citizen, so I don't think this Norwegian government will want to spend 1 million euros on me.
Han trodde ikke at norske myndigheter ville være med på å redde hans liv I og med at han ikke var norsk statsborger. Det var vondt å høre. Men jeg skjønner jo godt, når han satte ord på det, så skjønner jeg godt hvordan han tenkte. Jeg ser jo veldig godt at han kan tenke sånn. Og så synes jeg det var litt vondt at han tenkte sånn, stakkar. Fordi for oss så har ikke det noe som helst å si hva slags statsborgerskap man har. Det et menneskeliv som på norsk jord, som her I Oslo, som I Norge. Det livet må vi gjøre alt du kan for å redde, uansett hvor man kommer fra verden.
Forhandlingene mellom gisseltageren og politiet går sin gang, uten at Michael kan gjøre noe som helst.
As we speak, Peter, I'm starting to feel that I can trust you. But
Thank you.
My superior, he don't know you. He just look at the demand, and there is a bomb in Oslo during the peace price. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's scared. He's scared to death.
Yeah.
Helt plutselig forhandlingen over, og så sier gisseltageren at han kan løsne tauet og fjerne teipen.
If you first can send Michael out of the door,
yeah.
somebody on the outside will call him, and then yeah. Michael just goes towards the police officers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give me 2 minutes.
Yeah. Just keep me on the phone.
Yeah. Okay. Just a minute.
Yeah.
Michael skal få gå. Han fri. Det vanskelig å høre det på opptaket, men gisseltageren sier at Michael må gå. Og så sier han unnskyld. Michael svarer no problem.
I remember him telling me that yes, he's going to release me. So when he untied everything, I don't know how, whether I flew. All I saw was that I was out with the police on the floor and then beckoning to me with their hands that come. And then I rushed there and they were asking me what he has inside there and stuff. So when he untied me to the police, it was so swift. I think maybe it could be the fastest time of my life. Because I was, you know, now I could smile, I could laugh, I could be happy because I'm out. But at that point, no. It was between life and death. You are standing in a situation where your life is like a thread. You can lose it at any point in time. So it wasn't a matter of laughter. It wasn't a matter of smile. But today, by the grace of God, I'm okay. I'm strong, alive, and everything is fine. But that day, how I got out from that place to the police, I'm sure if it is, I could be faster than the cheetah. It was strange.
Når gisseltageren arrestert, og situasjonen over, bestemmer Michael seg for å takke ja til å bli på hotellet. Natten alene i et nytt hotellrom blir lang.
I think that day I had nightmares afterwards for a while. So I went and the psychologist gave me some medication that could help me to sleep. Because I think it was something you put under your tongue and then you are gone. So because it was after 2-3, I remember that same night, I slept in the hotel. I didn't go home. So the hotel gave me a room to sleep. But when I woke up, I was lying on the floor. I was not on the bed. I didn't sleep on the bed. When I woke up in the morning, I was lying on the floor, not on the bed. So I don't know what happened during the night, because I remember going to bed on the bed, but when I woke up, I was lying on the floor there. Yeah.
Etter denne natten får Michael tilbud om å bli på hotellet. Han takker nei. Han vil ta eksamen.
And I told them, no, I have an exams that I have to write, so I'm going to write the exams. And then they said, no, the university is ready to let you stay without writing the exams. You can write it later in May. But I said, no, I'm prepared enough. I'm going to write the exams. And after the breakfast, they drove me by the boss's car from the hotel in Oslo to Ås, where my university is.
Tilbake på Ås går Michael inn på universitetet og tar eksamen.
I went and wrote the exams because I had prepared. But I think I wrote the exams under pressure. Because in my mind, I don't know where the ideas were coming from, but I could see that I'm writing. And
hvorfor velger Michael å ta eksamen kun få timer etter han trodde han skulle dø? Monica og de andre kollegene i KGF har sett flere gisler som tar uvanlige valg.
Michael mente jo selv at det var sikkert fordi at han hadde mye adrenalin. Han var i hvert fall veldig tydelig på det, at det var sikkert på grunn av adrenalinet. Og det var det jo sikkert. I tillegg så tenkte jeg om det kanskje også kan ha noe med å gjøre det at nettopp fordi at når du blir tatt som gissel og du blir fratatt selvråderetten, livet ditt ligger i en annens hender, så har vi også gjort oss noen erfaringer med at noen gissler kan bli veldig opptatt av at det viktig for dem å si nei de gangene de har muligheten til å gjøre det, for å ta tilbake noe av det der å bestemme over sitt eget liv, da.
Michael var den eneste av alle studentene som fikk en A på eksamen.
It was a shock to me because I was in a state of panic at that time.
Etter at eksamen var over, kollapser han. Adrenalinet og kreftene tok slutt. Det tar lang tid før Michael føler seg trygg igjen. For hvordan kan han vite at gisseltageren ikke har samarbeidet med flere?
One of the things I was thinking of was that maybe he's working with people that could come and harm me. Maybe he has a network or something like that. So sometimes when I'm walking around, I feel like someone was following me. You know, maybe some of his colleagues or something like that was following me. Until after the case, the court case, then I realized that, okay, I think he was working alone. And now that he's in jail, I think I'm safe. So I felt safer after the court case. Because before that, when I'm walking around, you feel like someone is following you.
Michael bor fortsatt i Norge og har giftet seg og fått barn. I dag tar han en doktorgrad og underviser i internasjonale studier. Og når han tenker på gisseltageren i dag, blir han ikke bitter.
For me, I don't hold anything against him now. It's only that you have to be cautious of him. I would not have anything negative against him. But if you ask me to go and eat with him, I will not eat, not because I hate him, but because I don't trust him. That's all.
I neste episode får du høre hva forhandleren Katrine gjør når personen på andre siden av døren allerede har begynt å skade offret og truer med å drepe det. Men hva gjør hun når offret og gjerningspersonen er den samme?
Det fortjener ingen det du har opplevd, Anne. Så det er begrenset hvor mye et menneske skal tåle i forhold til hva som er urett, men det betyr ikke at et menneske skal gå under allikevel.
Forhandlinger på liv og død er laget av meg, Alexander Nordahl, og Tine Eide, som er produsent og lyddesigner. Prosjektleder for denne serien er Jannike Engan. Gry Egenes er redaktør. Konsulent har vært Berit Hedemann. Sluttmiksen er gjort av Hans Christen Hyrve. Musikken er laget av Gallowhill. Ina Engebretsen har logget. Ansvarlig redaktør i Dagens Næringsliv er Janne Johannesen. Lydklippene du har hørt er hentet fra NRK.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Finansredaksjonen. DNs podcast om det som skjer I aksjemarkedet. Med Dagens Næringsliv sin kommentatorer, Terje Rikstad, Tor Christian Jensen og meg, Anita Hoemsnes. Hver onsdag, der du pleier å høre på podcaster.